before.
Hit the button.
Okay.
We're on. Welcome to the work session. Only 5 minutes of technical difficulties. Good afternoon, everybody.
Good afternoon.
See, we got everybody here, it looks like.
And then Brenda Freeburn is also on the phone.
Let's see. There we go. All right. I guess we turn it over to Anton to talk about PUD process.
Does that work, Anton?
Yeah, that sounds good. Do you want me to share my screen?
Yeah.
Does that work best?
Yeah, you might
yeah
as well.
Why don't you go ahead and do that so you can control it?
Okay. Give me 1 second.
We see your emails.
Those are my emails.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Let me situate it. Okay, this is just right out of the council packet. But yeah, getting started, what we want to go over is basically the PUD standards for review and the criteria that's used for approval. We want to make sure that, you know, this session is not intended to talk about a specific project, just about the process. So, but what we'll cover is the purposes of a PUD, standards for creating that zone district, and the review criteria and review standards for map amendments. So, and I'm assuming you've had a chance to read through this already, so I'll not do a rote reading of the entire thing, but the purpose is to allow and encourage compatible uses to be developed in a sensitive manner, to promote greater flexibility in the placement of structures, to encourage more efficient use of land and utilities, to provide quality open space and recreational amenities, to achieve compatible land use relationships, to promote architectural variety and design, and to incorporate streetscape designs, landscaping, public spaces, and multimodal transportation facilities. Standards for a PUD zone district include permitted conditional uses, dimensional standards, landscape standards, special use regulations, road standards, off-street parking, pedestrian circulation, subdivision regulations, open space areas, required open space area, open space ownership and maintenance, and phase development and open space. All of this content is also in Section 10 of the Land Development Code. If you see any need to read through it in more detail, or let me know if you have any questions.
Anton, again,
yes.
If council has questions, would you like them to ask as you're going through, or wait till the end?
Yeah, we could just add, since it's such a small group today, we could just do this in a conversational manner if anybody has any questions.
Yeah, if you want to use the hand signals, that works too. I guess one question that I have is that on, and I didn't see it in this list or in reading elsewhere, I know at times we've talked about the size of the development providing, besides open space, providing space for public buildings such as a fire station, school, and snow removal sites. Is that more on an individual case basis, or is that something that is more specified?
Those issues will be addressed at the level of the subdivision application, and also those items are articulated in the annexation agreement related to the PUD.
Go ahead, Mr. Mayor, sorry.
Yeah, then is that incorporated in by direct language, or is it assumed that you reference the subdivision?
No, there would be direct language in the annexation agreement that addresses.
No, I mean into the PUD that would reflect what the annexation agreement requires.
There is language in the PUD that basically links the PUD to the annexation agreement.
Okay.
It, just, Anton, for the council's reference, these 12 topics, is this how you're kind of chunking down, or you could chunk down a specific application and having discussions in the future?
And I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
In other words, is there are these 12 topics, how you could potentially break, kind of eat the elephant in pieces as we are potentially looking at another application right now?
And I would add that we're not always talking about an annexation agreement being part of it either. These are PUD standards and process, so we're not speaking of any particular development right now. We're just talking in general.
But if it is subject to annexation agreements, that would be included. Correct, Kathy?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well,
are there any other questions?
I think next slide, Anton.
We'll just continue. So moving into the PUD review criteria, this is the criteria suggested to review the planned unit development applications. Is that the proposed PUD encourages innovation? The proposed PUD encourages land development that's a greatest extent possible, preserves, respects, and incorporates unique features of the site. The proposed PUD design standards combine and coordinate architectural styles. The PUD allows for efficient design and use of solar access, and provides for adequate, accessible, and properly located open space and recreational spaces. And the PUD promotes the efficient use of land, resulting in a network of streets and utilities that maximize the allocation of fiscal and natural resources. The PUD will also propose specific uses permitted within the PUD zone district, and PUD plan protects environmentally sensitive areas and occurs on land physically suited for construction. And the PUD proposes residential density and a maximum non-residential floor area that will be compatible with the integral neighborhood design. And continuing, the PUD proposes at least 15% of the total gross area for common open space. And the PUD plan provides a higher quality of development than is found in traditional zone districts. And the boundary between a PUD and adjacent land uses shall provide an adequate transition between those.
Anton, Kathy, too, just for, again, council's benefit, those criteria you just went through, as when they're acting as judges, those are the criteria by which they apply to an application to determine approval, denial, or conditions?
Correct.
Yes.
And Kathy, is the PUD adopted by resolution or ordinance?
It'll be by ordinance. You typically set the zoning during that process as well, so there'll be an ordinance that both approves the PUD and the zoning as it's established through the process.
Okay, thank you.
I see a hand by Bo.
Hey! Well, I just got a little question. Is this kind of a building philosophy? Is there other alternatives to PUDs, just out of curiosity? Is that what this kind of is, Anton?
Not particularly. It's basically the PUD, the intention would be to do something that, I guess for lack of a term, more specific or special than would typically occur in a regular zoned condition.
Okay. So it kind of is a philosophy, a building, a zoning philosophy in a sense?
Yeah, I guess.
One way to do it?
Or,
Bo, okay. One way to think about it is if you, in Anton's office, he'll have a colorful zoning map that'll reference, you know, single family, residential, commercial uses.
Yep.
And a developer can propose with our code that they do a planned unit development, which would give them flexibility over and above the prescribed zoning. But typically in that, you have specific criteria which you're looking at to evaluate, does this specific planned unit development merit approval? But the point of comparison would be the underlying zoning. This is probably different in that it came in to the city as a planned unit development. But again, you have traditional zoning, and that's displayed in a beautiful map in Anton's, and this is a way a developer can ask for flexibility from that underlying zoning.
That answers my question. Thank you.
Anything else before we move on? Okay. And in anticipation of a lot of the discussion that will be happening during these reviews, some processes and terms that are likely to come up for discussion, we wanted to go over with you just so we all have a common understanding of what is in fact being talked about. And those things will be TIF, that's tax increment financing, metro districts, real estate transfer taxes, general explanation of affordable housing and area median income, the annexation agreement, as well as just a bit of a reminder regarding quasi-judicial process and ex parte communication. I spelled parte wrong on the slide, sorry. But starting with tax increment financing, or TIF, TIF is a public financing mechanism that is used as a subsidiary for redevelopment, infrastructure, and other community improvement projects. And if you have a look at the graph here, it shows how future property tax revenue increases to that revenue are diverted from the general fund and used for project-specific purposes within a specific meets and bounds. Over a number of years, as the cost of basic services increases, the revenue is frozen for basic services. Important point with tax increment financing is that it works with property taxes, and as we know, it's actually the county that collects property taxes. So county participation would be necessary for any use of TIF.
Mallory. Yeah. Councilor Logan has a question.
Yep. We're trying to get Mallory on.
Yeah, that was what my question was, Anton, is there a way to work tax increment financing through sales tax, or is it solely property tax?
Yes. So in the state of Colorado, you could use both. It depends on which. There's two types of TIF. But yeah, there's a way to construct it so the incremental growth in sales tax and the incremental growth in property tax can, instead of going to be additive in terms of our revenues, the county's revenues, the school district's revenues, goes back into the project area. It's a complex form of financing. It's something I've done several times. I think Anton's been involved with it. Key thing to maybe emphasize is that it was originally created to deal with blight and, you know, urban blight. Might be applied to a main street, it might be applied to a housing project. It was its traditional uses, and the reason it was created You may also hear it being requested from a developer for what's called greenfield development, or basically an area that has had no historical development. That's where it becomes more controversial, particularly not only in the state of Colorado, but around the country. But it's a creative way of financing where, you know, it's not an additional tax on the underlying business or residential property. It's basically based on the premise that because you've implemented a plan, the property values and sale tax have gone up, and that additional increment, instead of going to go into our coffers, it goes into improvements in the project. It can be controversial because it requires other, it can be impacting to other taxing districts. So quite a bit of discussion has to occur and collaboration needs to occur, and new law around tax increment financing kind of forces that collaboration with the county and other taxing entities.
Yeah, one follow-up.
Question here.
The tax increment financing, really the only place that that is partially done and is slightly modified is on Garden Walk at this time in the city of Gunnison, because essentially it's exempt from property taxes for X number of years, and that amount of quote revenue is what they've transferred into bonds to build the structure. So the problem with the city is we only control 3.8 mils, if I remember correctly, and that means that's pennies on the dollars that people pay for property tax. The big ones are the county and the school district, and then you have everybody else that's floating around from the cemetery district up. So that becomes then a real negotiation problem. In terms of sales tax, we did sort of a modified form of that, where we split the increase in tax revenue with City Market for so many years, provided that certain conditions were met, that it really was new revenue to the city, and it was a 50-50 share back above normal growth and what existed prior to that point. So they can be done. Other businesses that were offered that in the years following City Market looked at it and turned it down because it was dependent upon them not taking away business from other competitors.
If this is something that comes up and either council's interested in or a developer's, this would be one where I'd suggest you kind of hit the pause button, and we, you know, probably spend an hour just on this stool. It's complex. It's also expensive to implement. But it can be very, very beneficial, particularly in a main street or rehabilitating a housing project.
I think
Diego, you had a question?
Yeah, I did. Just thank you, Mayor, for pointing out the example of Garden Walk. I'd be curious, are there any other existing examples where the project has already been developed, a TIF has been applied, and we've seen either pros or cons to this?
So the one that exists, the only formal TIF district in Gunnison County, is there's a downtown development authority that was created for kind of the base area in Mount Crested Butte. I created one in Vail and applied it to an existing, that community considered it a dilapidated commercial area to help finance public improvements, but it was applied to an existing commercial area, and again, that was part of the original intent of this tool, is to encourage redevelopment and rehabilitation of neighborhoods or commercial areas.
Okay, thank you, Russ.
And my personal experience working with TIF was primarily with the revitalization of abandoned warehouse districts into entertainment and residential areas, and it certainly can be a very effective financing mechanism to get necessary infrastructure in place. But to Russ's point earlier, it is somewhat of an anomaly to use this mechanism for greenfield development. Okay, any other questions before we move on?
Thanks, Anton and Russ.
And then metro districts are independent governmental entities that are formed to finance, design, acquire, install, construct, operate, and or maintain public improvements or critical infrastructure that's not otherwise provided. Metro districts have the ability to tax or assess fees for the services that it provides. These special taxing districts have an extra mill levy that is added to the annual property tax statement. So this is an extra fee that's paid above and beyond your normal tax payment. And it's worth noting that Gunnison Rising Metro District does exist. The service plan was created in March 2016, and the developers will likely be seeking to amend.
Some of the general considerations for a metro district. First, it sounds very simple. You know, why not? If a developer wants to tax themselves more to pay for public improvements, why not? So some of the considerations a municipality will have is, first, you're allowing the creation of a new governmental entity within our boundaries. Also, I've seen where metro districts, you know, maybe put 40 to 50 mills on a project, and all of a sudden, project gets built and you have homeowners that are knocking on your door going, why am I paying so much property tax? And then the real consideration would be if the city wanted, or anybody else for that matter, school district wanted to do on property tax, and you have one geographic area, particularly one geographic area with a lot of people that are voters, have a very high mill levy, getting their support for a new tax can be a lot more challenging.
As one of the other things that you have to be wary of.
Sorry, my fault.
You just trying to make me into an echo.
No, I was on my screen. It shows her.
She was playing.
I
did that too.
Anyway,
I'm sorry.
What I was trying to say here before I was interrupted, which probably should have been interrupted, that one of the things you have to be cautious with is to make sure that whatever the metro district does that interfaces with the city remains compatible. We had one that took a long time to get rid of, although called the West Gunnison Sewer District.
Yeah.
And the biggest problems was it really wasn't a compatible system in how it was run and how it worked, and you end up with quite a bit of issues around if you ever want to try to eliminate that extra taxing area out there.
Thanks, Anton.
Great. So moving on to real estate transfer taxes. This is a very simple concept that is basically when a property is sold and the deed is transferred from one owner to another, a managing entity, perhaps the city, can collect a fee for the completion of that transaction. And those are potential funds that can serve as project-specific revenue streams.
And also illegal in Colorado for us to adopt.
So just to add to the mayor's comment, what you do see is a developer, and this exists with a project in Gunnison, not to name any projects, a real estate transfer fee where the developer chooses to impose it on themselves. Works the exact same way. It's wonderful. Tabor took this away from us. It was a wonderful tool.
The legislature did that separately.
Oh, was it different? Okay, I thought it was Tabor. Good correction. Anyway, you do find this in projects where a developer will create this as a fee to support public infrastructure.
Yeah. What Tabor took away was the right to vote for it. The legislature took away the right to put it on the ballot. and only grandfathered places like Crested Butte are allowed to have it.
Right.
If I remember my history right. Anton,
keep going.
All right. Then just a quick overview of affordable housing and area median income. This will inevitably come up in discussions. Basically, AMI, which is referred to a lot when talking about housing, is area median income. And my understanding from conversations with Willa Williford, who seems to be our regional expert, is that the Gunnison market gap is most notable in the 60% to 120% AMI range. And affordability is generally defined as where the monthly payment, be that rent or mortgage, is no more than 30% of a household's gross income.
Yeah.
So it's just a general overview.
Yeah. One side comment is that in the city of Gunnison, essentially 80% is our 100%. The AMI is always based on countywide information, so the city, if you really want to know where the median is for the city, it's at approximately 80% of the county's AMI.
Okay.
And Anton and Kathy, one thing we should probably, currently the city really does not have any regulations or requirements for affordable housing to apply to a developer. It can be part of the process in a PUD, as I understand, but we don't have any standards to refer to.
Yeah, I would agree that, getting a phone call. We don't have anything in code or land development code that has that requirement, but one aspect of the PUD is flexibility and also the opportunity to negotiate things that are a benefit to the city as well, like affordable housing.
Kathy, to that point, which I think it will be relevant, you believe the city does have the ability to negotiate for affordable housing in a PUD?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and there's some broad language. I think it's maybe a little bit further along or might be behind that, that a PUD, one of the considerations is addresses the housing needs. It's not the most perfect language, but I think it can be extrapolated that it addresses the housing needs of the community.
Okay, any other questions?
See no hands.
All right. Moving on. Another discussion point that'll be coming up will be regarding the annexation agreement. And PUD standards state the annexation agreement is the overriding document for Gunnison Rising in this case. And the agreement addresses concerns or responsibilities such as phasing, land dedications, requirements, services, infrastructure, et cetera, et cetera. This could also include housing. And Mayor, to your point, a lot of the criteria you asked about earlier would be wrapped up in those criteria. The annexation agreement is not directly part of the major change for a PUD application. However, it is very closely related, and any changes to the annexation agreement are reviewed and approved by City Council. Any questions?
For any PUD, this is, with our code, kind of the key where the negotiation comes in, where essentially the deal is laid here in terms of, you know, what responsibilities does the city have, what responsibilities does the developer have. So staying close to our attorney in this and making sure we take the time to thoroughly review this is important versus particularly rushing this piece. And we never want to rush any piece.
Yeah. Well, that's why we proposed the calendar to really spread this spread this project out and break it down into specific subject areas that can be worked on in essentially work sessions with the applicants, but that will now be part of the public hearing process. So, and finally, the one thing to remind everybody of is the quasi-judicial process and considerations for ex parte communication. Quasi-judicial action involves a determination of the rights, duties, or obligations of specific individuals on the basis of an application. This type of decision is referred to as quasi-judicial precisely because it bears similarities to functions performed by courts. Definition of ex parte communication any communication between a council member and a party to this legal proceeding or any other person about this application outside of the public hearing process. And this includes casual discussion, emails, phone conversations, regardless of the context. So I'm constantly reminding people I run into at the grocery store about this when they ask questions, as well the definitely press on this with our planning and zoning commissioners whenever things are being considered. So my recommendation is if anybody wants to speak with you about this subject while it's in process, just politely decline and explain to them that you are simply not able to do so until the decision is finalized.
Now you can also encourage them to participate, come to the public hearing. Please give their feedback.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Or send Erica an email.
She loves them.
And in additional, you know, if and when you receive emails from anybody, be it the applicant or member of the public, we just ask that you do not read or open those and forward them directly to planning staff. And we can include them in as a formal comment in any upcoming packet.
Counselor, anything you would want to add to this?
Not particularly. I think my only question would be if we want it to planning staff or if we want it to Erica as the clerk, which is where I've always told people to send it to. I leave that, Russ, to you and Anton to sort out, but same thing, if you receive any kind of communication, written, verbal, or otherwise, provide that information and the contact to whether it's community development or Erica, and just make sure that disclosure has made, because that is part of the process that all of you maintain your objectivity for the quasi-judicial process.
I think the cleanest, you know, the Planning Commission process, ComDev will deal with it, but once it hits council, I think whether council gets it, Anton gets it, making sure that Erica gets all of those comments since she's the one that's asked.
Okay.
Doesn't she have authority over the public hearing? The quasi-authority?
She's the one that is the keeper of the record.
Yeah. Moving on.
Hey. Just in general, does anybody have any questions winding things up here?
Well, let's go around the room. Jim Miles, any thoughts or concerns?
No, just how long the taxing, all the things that's going to be answered as we go through this. I mean, you enlightened us, it's been great. Everything I wanted to ask has been asked.
Okay. Diego.
Yeah, I would agree with Jim. A lot of the questions I had were answered, so thank you, Anton and Andy, for all your work.
Mallory.
Yeah, it's clear for now, I think. Get to learn about all the different little funding mechanisms, because that's our biggest new challenge. So I think it now just depends on a case-by-case basis.
Okay. And Bo?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep.
I agree. Typically, how long does this silence or this process last, quasi-judicial process that we need to kind of be really tight-lipped or careful about what we do or say?
Do you want to answer that question?
Sure. I don't think there's a typical. Once the application is filed involving a land use decision, you're in the quasi-judicial process, so it starts then. And it lasts until the council ultimately makes decisions on the application. So that could be, a few months. In one where we have pending now, it's going to be several months. And it's already been several months in process, actually. So it is the one area, really, where you can't be talking to constituents, applicants, anybody. You just need to have kind of a deaf ear and eye, except for when you're sitting in your councilor role during a meeting in which it's being discussed.
Typically, is there quite a bit of attempt to have conversation with councilors in this kind of situation?
I tend to think so. The general public doesn't understand quasi-judicial very well. And so in their mind, they're just doing what they think that they have a right to do and they've elected you, so they're trying to communicate. And so the burden really falls on you to say, hey, I understand that you want to talk to me, but we can't. We have to protect the process. Because failure to do so is immediately appealable to district court if there's a violation of the process that the applicant believes has occurred and negative impact. So I think people try to reach out because they don't know that they can't. So it's incumbent on counselors to say, I'm sorry, you talk to me about other stuff, but not this.
So this really applies to any conversation related to Gunnison Rising?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Great. Good.
Yep.
Okay.
In fact, what you could do is print out slide 15 there and just have it ready to hand to people.
In the produce aisle. It's always the produce aisle, too.
Right. So generally, there's not any malintent by people wanting to talk to you about things. They generally know what you're doing and they're interested and are usually just genuinely curious about things and asking questions. And it's just very important that you keep in mind that, you really have to just politely decline talking about it and encourage them to actually get involved in the process if they want to have a discussion, to be part of the hearings.
Thank you very much. It really cleared that up for me. Thanks.
Okay. Any other questions, Bo?
Nope.
Okay. Guess we're done with this topic unless you have some additional comments, Russ.
Maybe two more points. One, a big PUD is like a big elephant, and it's an interconnected elephant, and it's complex. I just encourage you, if you need more time to process, digest something, just simply ask for it. Time is money for the developer, but these are important decisions, so take the time you need. The other thing I just would like to ask, Kathy or Erica, could we please clarify what we can and can't do with work sessions versus continuing public hearings? And I asked a couple of questions that I think kind of had Kathy provide a very clear opinion on this. So Kathy, do you want to...
Yeah, sure. Once you're in a quasi-judicial process, it's really judicial in the sense that decisions are being made, and so there's very strict rules on how you receive information and where you may receive it from and when. And so that's during public hearings and action items before the council. So There won't be work sessions related to the current Gunnison Rising. We've switched that all now to public hearings, and we're just going to have to open that up a little bit to allow you guys to be able to address questions with the applicant and work through things, and also have the public be able to be there and ask questions and get answers as well. Because we're in the process now, and it's no longer informal. It's very formal. So it'll only be during the public hearing process, which, you know, I think there's, Andy could clarify this, three or four more scheduled, and they're likely just to be continued each time, so that it's always the opportunity for another public hearing to occur, so that you guys can get the information and contact with the applicant that you need to make good decisions. And we're actually starting that, even though you have one currently continued to May 12th, we're actually doing another one on April 28th, I believe. When we get to May 12th, we'll kind of meld the two public hearings into one and go forward from there.
We will be doing a notice for that.
Kathy, if you check the record on when that was done, that was a tentative schedule, and it said that that may or may not be changed. So I think we can just continue the original hearing and note that we've altered the date, and can still say that we'll still keep it in the other date as well. You might want to check that.
Yeah, we can't go backwards, though.
No, but I didn't.
Because the public hearing was continued to May 12th, so we want to get something in front of you before then.
What I'm saying is it was continued to May 12th tentatively, unless otherwise notified. I believe that that's what I said on the record. Please check it. If so,
okay, we'll check it.
That means that you can continue it at any point down the line.
Okay, so we'll check the wording.
Yeah, now maybe I didn't say it that way, but that's the way I remember it.
Mm-hmm. Anything else, Anton?
I think that covers it. And beyond this discussion, if you have any further questions, feel free to reach out to me or Andy, and we'll do our best to answer any questions that you have. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Anton.
All right.
Thank you, everyone.
Move on to the next topic, Russ.
Yeah, just wanted to put this on the agenda just to continue to update you on events around COVID and our response, and also now the recovery. So first, from an operational standpoint, we kind of gotten into a new tempo just within the city. We're having weekly kind of all employee communication, where we're giving them an update in terms of where we are, and you know, getting into the regular tempo of communication from the emergency operating center. Recovery now, I think, is taking a couple different. I think will be very integrated at the end of the day and valley-wide, just like the response is. Scott Morrill's encouraged us to really stand up and begin to work on a structure for recovery, and has recommended that we use the One Valley Prosperity Project as a structure to do that, but we'll need to kind of support that with staff. Just to be clear, though, what the ICE Lab has been doing has been incredibly important and will continue to be incredibly important. And I think they'll kind of play and be a critical role in terms of defining what recovery looks like from a business standpoint. But they also made it clear that their bandwidth is very limited with two employees, and they need help and support, particularly as it deals with other areas of the community, such as just individual needs, community needs, institutional needs and issues, and what our key institutions will look like in the future. So a good meeting occurred yesterday to put some structure around this, and more details will come to all the elected officials, and I'll have more clarity and would expect to present something to you next week. Also next week, we'll be sharing with you ideas for essentially holding back on expenditures, but looking at this in a phased way, being very, very conservative on expenditures, say between now and June. Then in June, a checkpoint of kind of looking into the summer. Do we see that we're going to have a summer or not? And then another checkpoint at the end of the summer, just to verify if we thought we were going to have a summer, did people actually come here from a tourism standpoint? So we're going to be working, and this will be a work in progress, but a concept for you in terms of how are we judicial in our use of money. We've already begun to apply some internal additional standards for spending, essentially kind of taking back some of the discretionary spending a director would have, and that going through myself. But basically we're saying is, if there's something that we don't have to commit dollars to, let's not at this point. The capital projects, though, we want to explicitly review with you next week. Another thing that's coming up, and this is just something to begin to think about, but I think all the governmental entities are beginning to be requested for financial support, whether it's community needs, business needs. So again, kind of looking to the ICE Lab, is there something that's meaningful, targeted, and strategic right now in from an individual standpoint? The interesting preliminary information I'm getting, talking both to the community foundation that's really playing a key role on community needs, is kind of hold your powder for right now today. Some of the immediate needs, there's been an influx of money, which is wonderful, from the community to help the food pantry, and also kind of hearing the same thing, although David's pondering this and looking at an enormous amount of data right now that he's received from 9 different business sectors. But kind of the initial thought was you have multiple loans through the SBA, 2 different types of loans that could be $25,000 or more. Under $25,000, it's pretty simple. The mayor and I have been chatting with Region 10. We could also, if we wanted to, we could plug in, and we're still vetting this with Kathy, and she and I have had some initial discussions about this in terms of how do we do it with our charter provision that we're not supposed to give money to entities. But we can do economic development grants like you do every year for your grants process. So I'm just acknowledging that, you know, I'm sure you're getting pinged for requests and ideas for a community. We're happy to help give you some thoughts and some ideas, and we'll have some more discussions next week. But kind of the preliminary feedback I'm getting, both from a community standpoint and business standpoint, is let these systems right now this week kind of run their course, but then there most likely could be a gap where there won't be federal aid, or the donors in the valley may dry up a little bit, and that a gap may be needed to get both individuals, or help get individuals and businesses, to some form of normalcy at the end of the day. This is going to be tough for our business community. We're not everybody's going to survive. I think we all appreciate that. But I just want to acknowledge and just ask if you had any feedback. Is this something you would like us to think about as we just look at our budget? Is that something you would like us to think about, is maybe how much money could we potentially think about and still make sure we're sustainable and functional as a governmental entity to provide key services? Not a decision. I'm just, you know, if you had any musings or thoughts on that, is it something we should give some thought to?
I have a question. So I was pinged specifically by KBUT that had a transformer go out amid all of this, and radio was down in Gunnison for 2 days, I guess. And so he pinged me, they have added costs, and so I think it's certainly something we look into, and you said it could be an economic development grant process. It maybe comes out of saving on some capital improvements. Do we know what a timeline on something like that would look like? Would it be an application again? I think they're federally, they're trying to make things as easy as possible, but you know, once you open up the pot of money, you're going to have a flood and of requests. And if we don't really have strict guidelines or,
yeah,
you know, how soon can we figure that sort of thing out to help these entities?
I guess first question, Mallory, really is, would you like us to give it some thought? And you're absolutely right. I don't think you, I wouldn't recommend you do one-offs. I'd recommend you kind of identify a pool of money. And I think, again, the message I got is you want to be very thoughtful about when you apply that money, because it looks like there's now money available, particularly for businesses, and do you want to ensure that a business has pursued at least two significant opportunities they can pursue, and then maybe where the gap? So right now the only question is it something you think we should give some thought and bring some ideas to you in the future?
I'd say yes.
Okay. Great. Oh, what's your thoughts?
Well, again, I want to hold off on expenditures personally. I don't know what this whole thing is going to turn out to be like with the COVID issues and impact on the town financially and stuff. Had a good conversation with a gentleman the other day talking about we need to do what we can do to get up and running again. And his suggestion was to take some of this money instead of spending it on whatever, maybe buy some tests, find out who has had the virus, who is clear of it, who has it, and work with the people. I don't know. It was kind of a complicated approach, but, you know, identify the people who need to be dealt with the virus and somehow, some way, carefully get life going again financially. Then you get the small businesses going again, restaurants open and all that kind of stuff. So he wanted to talk for quite a while about this, and I heard him. He wants, you know, really wants to get, I mean, tourism is our economy down here. Not spend money on, again, I'm just going to use it as an example, Palisades pavement at this point, right now, and do whatever it takes to get our economy up and running again. I guess that's my only comment.
Okay. Bo, one quick response. Certainly off of public health initiatives right now, they are trying to secure more tests and do wider spread testing as soon as possible. But the availability of tests is a real problem for us right now. So if you run into that individual again, tell them that to the best of the county's ability that they are trying to do just that in terms of testing.
Yeah, and Bo, we're...
Yeah, I think I kind of came across with that too. You're saying, you know, I don't think we have access right at this point. So, yeah, anyway, thank you, Jim.
You're welcome. Diego, or, yeah, Diego.
Yeah, my input would be to definitely think about this and, with as much as we know right now, create an effective plan. I do think it's important to let, like Russ and I spoke yesterday, and like I said yesterday, I think it's important for the community to know that we are working and thinking about this without any immediate guarantees, because, well, we don't know what's coming in, or we don't know where this could go, but it's certainly something that we're thinking about and we'll be taking action on as we can. But overall, I think it's a great initiative and it's fully supported.
Okay. Jim?
I think we need to look at this like a working document and figure out through time where the money's needed and and then try to come up with what's needed. I mean, right now there's a thousand different angles we can take.
Yeah, there is.
And we're going to have to prioritize it because we don't have the money that any of us would want to do to help the town recover from this. So I'm looking at it as a living document and just compiling everything and hoping that we can do something to help the right people at the end to recover in a timely manner.
Okay. One thing that Russ is aware of, I did, as mayor, draft a letter for the paper for this week, basically talking about, you know, that we're following the public health orders and that we are thinking ahead to the recovery, and that together we need to generate as many ideas as we can and work together. So it's sort of a generic letter saying we're out there thinking about this, and it doesn't promise any great solution, but it is optimistic in tone. So I wanted to share that with you. It will be in, hopefully, in this week's paper. So, anything else from
sessions,
Erica or Russ?
Nothing.
If there's nothing else from anybody else, thank you very much, and we're finished 30 minutes early.
Woo-hoo.
Go ahead, watch. I don't see anybody's hands, so I will say that we are adjourned, and it's 1:01.